ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
MLB, it's back. WFUV, we're back, and we're here to talk some baseball on this fine Wednesday morning in the Bronx. I'm Evan Harkin, joined alongside Brandon Shorey and Tucker Austin, with Will Talent producing on the board in the back. And before we get into some ball talk, how we doing, fellas? How's the week been so far?
Really can't complain. I mean, early morning here, but a chance to come in and talk some ball. Take a look around the diamond, look around the league. My team's doing well so far, off to a hot start, so really can't complain.
Yeah, hot start to the 2025 MLB season. I had a chance to go to all three of the Yankees' opening games. I covered the game on Sunday for WFUV, but I went as a fan on Thursday and Saturday, and that was probably one of the most electric opening series I think the Yankees have ever had. So it's a hot start for the Yanks, and it's a hot start for everybody. We talked a little bit before the show. There aren't a lot of teams that have shown to be like completely abysmal.
Yeah.
Like we had last year. There's a couple of teams that haven't notched a win yet, but that comes down to matchups and a bit of a slow start. There seems to be a lot of league parity this year.
Mm-hmm. All three games is pretty special. So what was the difference between the two? You went to one as a fan,
two as a fan. Two. My sister got me tickets to opening day, mm-hmm. which shout out. That was for my birthday, which is in a couple months. Then on Saturday, I went with my friends from school, and that like we bought tickets for that. That game was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because that was the 20-6?
Yes.
20-7, I think. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. It's a football score. I can barely remember. I blacked out after Judge's home run. or the first one, I should say, because there were three. But yeah, then Sunday was as a beat reporter for WFUV, and it was just like a really special weekend.
Nice, yeah. You always hear players talk about them blacking out, but you don't hear about the fans blacking out.
No, that was ridiculous. After the home runs, there has never been three home runs on three straight pitches to start a game, yeah. and it will likely never happen again.
So to start a season.
Just feels so special to have witnessed that. It was ridiculous.
Absolutely. And Brendan, you mentioned your team, the Texas Rangers, doing pretty well for themselves as well, especially Nathan Eovaldi. I mean, it doesn't get much better than the Maddux he had. Talk about what you saw from Eovaldi last night.
I mean, it's classic Eovaldi. That's what I saw. He had a great first start to the season. Nothing like last night. But then he comes out and he channels his last year's 2 years ago from the playoffs performances. 9 innings, no walks, 8 Ks, only 4 hits. In a game where he really didn't have a whole lot of support from his offense either. But he came out and did his job. He did what he needed to do, and he got my team that win.
He did, and I mean, the 8 Ks to 0 walks is absolutely insane. And then you win a game 1-0, it kind of just puts the icing on the cake that you were able to shut them down. You know, your team only got one run. But how are you feeling about the Rangers overall? Because they're looking pretty good to me right now.
I'm very excited, actually, because my big worry with this team was going to be the pitching staff and the bullpen specifically. I mean, the offense I was never really worried about, which if you look at it, actually, it's off to a pretty slow start. I mean, you have Langford hitting well. You have Adolis hitting well. But outside of that, Seager starting off slow. Semien starting off slow. Jake Berger starting off slow. Jock is starting off slow. So you have all these guys who haven't had the hottest starts of the season, but that'll turn around. Mm-hmm. The pitching staff, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 in Eovaldi, Malley, Leader, and DeGrom come out in that series against the Red Sox. 4 solid starts. Kumar Rocker comes in game 5, gets rocked. But, I mean, that's your 5. Mm-hmm. At that point, you've had 4 guys come out and deliver great outings. And then this bullpen, since game 1 against the Sox, they gave up those 3 runs in the 9th. But then they were shut down for the rest of the series against the Red Sox. Come in. We don't talk about game 1 against the Reds. Game 2, obviously they didn't have a chance to come in, but they've looked solid, and that was going to be my big worry coming into the season is, can this bullpen stay healthy? Can they even compete? and it looks like they can.
Yeah, good news right there. Some good news for the Padres out west. Jackson Merrill, they just locked him up. He's a 21-year-old second-year center fielder. Today, this morning, Wednesday, April 2nd, they were able to sign him to a 9-year, $135 million extension last year, 24 home runs, 90 RBIs while batting 292. You don't usually see guys at 20 years old with that amount of power, but then combining it with batting 292, especially in a season where it was probably good if you were batting 270 batting average-wise last year. So what do you guys think about the that signing right there from the Padres? I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, he's so talented. Yeah, and I mean, like, for the Padres, they already have like a couple of guys in their core locked down for the foreseeable future. This is another addition to that younger core. It's pretty much just the Padres building a team that's going to be competitive for years to come now. I mean, you look at Tatis ever since he came back from like all the like some injury issues, some like PED issues, yeah, which like those discussions have already been had. The fact of the matter is now Tatis is back fully healthy and balling as he usually does. And Jackson Merrill is up the pipeline doing just as well. So the Padres, I love this signing. It's I love seeing young guys get locked down for long periods of time, because that's how you know a team is buying into their future and buying into success, especially in a smaller market like San Diego. Scooping a guy like Merrill for a longer period of time just keeps him away from the bigger markets.
And it really seems to me like San Diego kind of got a steal here with how much they got him for. 9 years, $135 million. You take a look at contracts around the league, especially recent contracts. Now,
yeah,
I'm not comparing him to Juan Soto, but you look at that Juan Soto deal, and then you look at this Jackson Merrill deal, you're like, huh. It makes you think a little bit, but a 21-year-old who's got a very bright future. You said it, Evan, 24 knocks last year, batting 292 still. He's got power. He's got consistency. Only lost that NL Rookie of the Year out to Paul Skeens. Otherwise, he was San Diego's Rookie of the Year. They actually have a sign. I saw it on Instagram the other day. On the way to the ballpark, where it says, like, whatever the stadium is, and it says, home of Jackson Merrill, the real NL Rookie of the Year.
Wow.
But, yeah, so I think great deal for the Padres, great deal for Jackson Merrill. He's locked out for the near future.
Yeah, no, I thought that the Padres got a steal there as well. You mentioned Juan Soto. What he did as a young player, another guy that was a star around this age, 21, was never take that contract. Always said no, got offered $400 million, said no, said no, said no, until it was finally his contract year, and then he could get the most money possible, kind of betting on himself. But seems like the Padres got an absolute steal here, locking up Merrill. He doesn't do that typical, you know, good young player thing we see nowadays where you push it off and you push it off and you show teams that you deserve more and more money. So
I'd fold for $15 million a year.
I would too. I would too. But you don't see it too much nowadays from these young stars. Good on the Padres right there. A team that was doing good up until I'd say about last night. Maybe still doing good, but a team that was undefeated until last night. The New York Yankees. Tucker here with your Yankee hat on. No shame right there.
No, absolutely not. Come on.
You know,
they're going to take two or three from the Diamondbacks, likely. Although, at this point, I wouldn't really be surprised if they kind of fell asleep in Game 2 and then, like, came back for Game 3 and, like, mm-hmm. just to avoid the sweep. But, yeah, last night was kind of a weird game. The Yankees went down early, which we saw them do against the Brewers a couple times. But they battled back within the first three innings.
Yeah.
You get a couple of solo shots, one of them from Anthony Volpe that went a pretty long way. I'm pretty sure the bats are giving him a bit more distance.
Yeah.
He didn't have this much pop before.
No, he really didn't.
But it's just the way he swings the bat. It's like he hits the ball lower on the bat, so having the like more wood in that area, it just is only going to help him. Yanks wound up tying the game, and then Corbin Burnes and the Diamondbacks gift the Yankees two runs on a botched PFP. Where have we seen that before?
Yes.
But after that, the Yankees kind of felt like they fell asleep for the rest of the game. They weren't really, like, the initiative was gone. They didn't feel like they needed to tack on anymore. They tried to nurse it to the finish, but then they got into some trouble in the late innings. The bases wound up loaded. I think it was the eighth, and Eugenio Suarez pinch hit grand slam. What do you even do with that? You know,
yeah.
It's like it's a veteran hitter coming off the bench. Of course he's going to put a charge in it. It goes over the wall. It is what it is. The Yankees kind of, they let that game get away from them after it was handed to them on a silver platter. You hate to see it, but I am glad that there were no, like, glaring defensive issues that led to this win. It was, like, straight up, like, batter beats pitcher, and and we're done with it. Like, as long as the Yankees can avoid the defensive issues from last year and they're not losing games because of that, that's my big takeaway from last night.
From what I could see, this game is actually an outlier from how they've been so far this season. Like, I was at that game too, that Saturday game, for the Yankees against the Brewers too, and insane. First of all,
franchise record single game insane. Home runs,
absolutely insane. I'm out of my friend group. I'm like the biggest probably baseball fan there, and they go back to back on back to back pitches. They're like, "Oh, that's cool. Have you seen that before?" I was like, "Yeah, I've seen that before." and then the next pitch comes, like, "Oh my god, have you seen that before?" I was like, "No, I haven't. I really haven't." So great game, but yeah, I mean, you look at how they played in that Brewers series, and then how they come in and play yesterday. In that Brewers series, they were relentless. They kept going. They kept their foot on the pedal. And then you mentioned it last night. It seemed like they were kind of falling asleep after taking like a lead. It's not how you win games. You got to keep your foot on the pedal. You got to keep your foot on their throat and push down. And that's just not what happened the other night, last night. But I don't think that has anything to do with what's going forward. I can see them, like you said, falling asleep game two, coming back game three. Diamondbacks are a good team, but so are the Yankees this year. So it should be a good rest of the series.
And we've got another big Yankee fan here, Willie T behind the glass.
Yo.
Sporting a pretty cool Yankee hat back there, too. Is that WFAN branded?
It is. Yeah, it was a giveaway. Awesome. I forget what game it was.
That was a giveaway. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I feel like they do the beanie every year.
They do. It may have been like 3 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
I've had this for a while now.
Yeah.
But, a couple of takeaways that I had from the game. Now, I didn't watch it all, but I was getting updates. I was watching all the highlights. Pretty busy night. But, Evan, you were talking about Jazz, big swing and miss, four strikeouts last night. But still, you know, in the Brewer series, hitting the ball pretty well, seeing the ball pretty well. That's what you're going to get out of him, though. He's big swing and miss no matter what. And some nights he's going to have golden sombrero nights, maybe even platinum sombrero type nights. I think Aaron Boone is still figuring out the lineup. He's been pretty consistent with Goldschmidt at leadoff now. I really liked what he had opening day with Wells in the leadoff spot. And maybe, you know, he's going to teeter with it a lot, too. They're only four games in. So maybe we see Goldschmidt again. Maybe Wells goes back up there. But maybe think about platooning Wells and Goldschmidt. So maybe tonight you go Wells in the leadoff spot. You move Goldschmidt to four. And then you bump Chisholm to six. Keep Volpe in the five. He had another home run last night. He was really big time. Obviously, the bats were relatively quiet all throughout. Shout out Jason Dominguez, first home run of the year, too. That was pretty sweet to see. Maybe he'll start coming around. And also Will Warren, too. Great first outing for him as well. Had a great spring training. I think what really got to the Yankees, because this guy always gets to the Yankees, it was Corbin Burnes.
Yeah.
Corbin Burnes is slowly over the last two or three years, specifically in 2023, is becoming one of those Yankee killers. He just always does well against the Yankees. I was at a game when he was still on the Brewers, and he had no hit them through eight innings. And then Devin Williams came in the ninth and kept the no-hitter alive, but the score was still 0-0. The Yankees somehow won 6-3. Really weird ball game. They got no hit. I'd never seen a game where a no-hitter was intact in person through nine innings, and then that team that was getting no hit won the game. Really weird stuff. But Corbin Burnes started that game, and he threw a gem. And he definitely was not as perfect as he was in that game that I was just talking about last night, but he was still nails. Four and a third, four hits, two runs, eight strikeouts in four and a third. That's pretty insane. But I think that definitely got to the Yankees as well. And for tonight, it's no easy task. I know he got roughed up a little bit in his first start, but Zach Allen's still a really good pitcher, too. So it's definitely a tough series for the Yankees for a second series, a good challenge for them. The Brewers are a good team in my eyes still. Like, they could definitely win the NL Central, but the Diamondbacks are in a much tougher division and are probably the second or even third best team in that division. So tough series. They're still shaking things up with the lineup. Really not too concerned. They came back and they had a lead. You're not going to hold it every time, though.
Yeah, you mentioned Corbin Burnes. I was looking yesterday before the game. He had it was either a 198 or like a 098 batting average against the Yankees hitters in his career. I was like, what am I looking at? But that goes to your point that he's just turning into one of those Yankee killers. And then to that Wells and Goldschmidt point, I wonder how much of switching them was the righty-lefty switches. Corbin Burns a lefty, I believe, right?
Righty.
Oh, he's a righty? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So yeah, they had Goldschmidt in the one, so that wouldn't be... You would put Wells.
Yeah,
in the one
I feel
there
like they left Goldschmidt and Bellinger up there after that second game because they moved those guys up into the 1-2 slot right. for that second game, and then the Yankees dropped 20 runs. So like after a game like that, is really, really difficult to move them out of the top two spots in the order. But now that they have a loss on their record, I think that it probably loosens things up for Boone to move the lineup around a little bit.
Well,
but
also
I just thought
too,
it,
they scored 33 runs with in 2 days.
Yeah,
in which that was the lineup. So why would Boone change it? It's just that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, and it was so funny to see like the Boone haters come out of the woodwork instantly after game one when they saw the new lineup for game two, and they were like, "Why is Boone changing the lineup again? He's back to his old tricks." And it's like, guys, calm down. Paul Goldschmidt and Cody Bellinger are the Moneyball equivalent of Juan Soto. Like them
the
together
aggregate.
Will give us Juan Soto numbers.
They're the
on the Yankees.
It's true.
So, it's going to be hard to move them out. But I like that platoon idea with Wells and Goldschmidt. You could really just switch them dependent on the handedness of the pitcher. Like you go lefty, put Goldschmidt at one, and put Wells down at four, and righty just switch it.
Well, also, too, with the Yankees, over the last, I would say, 7 years or so, definitely the entirety of Boone's tenure. We saw the graphic on opening day. I would assume that you guys probably saw it, too. I believe it was Max Mannis of John Boy that posted it. They've had a different leadoff hitter every single opening day for the last 6 or 7 years. So they're still in the Aaron Boone era, looking for their bona fide leadoff guy. I would not be shocked if Jason Dominguez sometime in July is batting leadoff. I wouldn't be shocked if Volpe gets some reps there as well. It's not just going to be Goldschmidt or Wells unless they're putting up astronomical numbers like they did in the first series, and there's just no reason to have anyone else other than them two. But even with that, those are two guys. You don't have one guy that you're saying, yep, he's our table setter. He's getting things started right away, which is also a good thing, too. You have multiple guys that can do that. That's great. That gives you a lot of depth throughout the lineup because you can move Wells around. You can put him, you know, 7-9. You can put him in the heart of the order, or you can put him at the top. Goldschmidt, same deal. You can put him at the top, or you can put him at the heart as well. So that's a good problem to have, I would say. But they're still in search of that bona fide leadoff guy. It's not necessarily a bad problem. I actually think it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, the Yankees maybe haven't found that leadoff spot yet, but what they have found is what bats they want to use, specifically the torpedo bats, probably the biggest story in the MLB right now. It seems to be shifting a little bit. I think day one and two of the season, the talk was like, oh, this is Yankee cheating. The MLB is going to figure this out. They're going to investigate it. And then other players came out and they were like, whoa, 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 these bats have been around for a while. It's perfectly fine. Some people just like to use them. Some don't. But then, you know, like you mentioned, Anthony Volpe, it seems like he's got a little bit more pop. You know, Jazz Chisholm, I have friends that were at the game, said that it seemed like when you're in Little League and some kid has a Mako beast and no one else does. That's how he explained it to me.
Yo, that ball's hopping off the bat
a little
bit stronger
than
normal.
You know, it's legal, but it looks like it's jumping off the bat a little bit more. It sounds like it's jumping off the bat a little bit more. Here's what Jazz Chisholm had to say about the bat in a tweet. He said, okay, explanation, the barrel is bigger, but within MLB regulation. For the idiots who say that it's moved to the label, you're an idiot. Nobody is trying to get jammed. You just move the wood from the parts you don't use to the parts you do. You're welcome. No more stress for y'all. So pretty self-explanatory right there. Bryson Stott of the Phillies backed that up also in a post game. He doesn't use the bat, but someone asked him about it. He says that they hook up wires and technology to hitters while they're in a batting cage, have them take a bunch of swings, and use the technology to tell what part of the bat the hitter uses the most, then move the most wood to that spot. Seems pretty self-explanatory. Almost seems like something that should have been in the MLB like 10 years ago, back when we were able to have this technology already. And Stott said it's not beneficial for hitters who use their whole bat, and not a specific part of the bat. For example, like Aaron Judge, Pete Alonso, guys that can hit the ball out if it's in on their hands. They have enough power to do so. But we've seen other players start using the bat besides the Yankees. Francisco Lindor, Ellie De La Cruz, who absolutely went nuclear with it a couple nights ago, two bombs. But What are you guys' opinions on the bat? My opinion is it's clearly legal, but it's clearly making some hitters better hitters.
But it's the hitters who have a tendency to hit the ball in the same place. Right. So I totally agree with Bryson Stott's take on this, where, you know, some hitters are able to use the entire bat and have, like, and they are just really good professional hitters who learned how to use, like, a standard baseball bat to hit the ball in any way that they can. Other guys have a specific tendency where they really only catch the ball, like, really cleanly in one region of the bat. So it makes sense to me to kind of move wood around in the barrel to the place where you're more likely to be striking the ball most of the time. Anthony Volpe being one of those guys, the way his swing works, he doesn't really hit the ball anywhere else than like on that upper end of the bat. So with more wood up there, it makes perfect sense. It doesn't even artificially like give him more like distance on his home runs or more pop. It's just that it's the way that bat tends to work. So I'm here for it. Even if that's somewhat Yankee biased, because the Yankees, like, they didn't show up with it first, but the narrative was that the Yankees introduced it to the league this year. I'm definitely here for it. Look at a guy like Giancarlo Stanton. We found out this season retroactively that he was using a torpedo bat for the entirety of the postseason. And hindsight's 20/20, but his bat looked weird last year in the postseason.
And
it did look
raking.
Weird. It looked different. It was thin. And I always looked at his bat, and I never thought anything of it. But, like, you know, 7 home runs in 14 games with a torpedo bat.
Yeah.
It makes a difference for the guys who have, like, hit more habitual hitting practices than the guys who are, like, more dynamic hitters.
It doesn't do anything to alter how the player hits, how the bat's constructed, really. I mean, when you look at it, it increases your barrel rate, which I think is perfectly fine. But you also have to acknowledge that it does have downsides. If you're one of these players using it and you miss your spot, if you hit it off the end of the bat, you hit it off the neck, you don't hit it on that sweet spot, that ball is going to be a weak ground or a weak pop-up. That ball is going nowhere. So it's a trade-off. It's, higher barrel rate because that's where you put all the wood where you usually make contact. So when you do make contact there, you're gonna get a pretty good shot out of that ball. But you don't hit it there, and your chances at getting a bloop single, your chances at getting a lucky hit, a grounder sneaking through, are going to go down because you're getting even worse contact than you would have before.
And how often do you think these bats are going to break now? Because if there's less wood lower on the handle, if they get jammed, these things are going to be like paper. Yeah. I haven't seen one shatter yet, but I'm still waiting to see somebody get a ball a little bit towards their hands. I feel like this torpedo bat's gonna go flying.
That bat would go far too.
Yeah.
I agree with Brendan here. I think that there's a lot to be said with the alteration here. It's not this drastic alteration. It's
within the regulations of an MLB baseball bat.
Regulations. And what to add to what you're saying, Brendan, was that these bloopers that you may see that you get off the handle there, those may turn into lineouts. It's a trade-off. Because if you're getting more of the barrel at a shorter part of the bat traditionally, that would be a bloop single. That would leak through the infield. If you're getting barrel on that, there's a more likelihood for that to be caught if it's squared up, hypothetically. So I just think it's a trade-off. You're definitely going to see more bloop singles. You're going to see that in baseball. It just happens no matter what. It's a game of chance. But your traditional contact point, it may be a little bit of a different result. You'll see more lineouts if they get jammed because the barrel is there. What you were saying too, Evan, about 10 years ago, this is also not the first time that we've seen bat alterations like this one. Yeah, sure, with the wood being at this specific point, we may have not seen, but I'll just name a few different bats from when all of us were kids growing up. The Kutch 22, thin middle of the bat, thin neck, solid barrel, really light, because Andrew McCutchen had wicked bat speed and could get his bat through the zone faster than anybody when he was in his prime. And I think his bat via Marucci was a big part of that. I had one of those bats. I loved that wood bat. the AP5, Albert Pujols' Marucci bat.
Oh, yeah.
That bat got banned because of the weight distribution. So much of a bigger barrel than a lot of other bats. The only person that was allowed to use it was Albert Pujols because he was grandfathered into the rule. And then one more bat, the Posey 28, another Marucci bat. Thinner on the neck, a lot more at the end of the bat. Buster Posey had a relatively long swing. So he's going to make more contact with his longer swing if the wood is transferred to the end of the bat. Now, they all look like traditional baseball bats that you think of. The torpedo bat doesn't. That's why it's alarming everybody. But if you actually take a look at different bats just over the last 10 years, and if you've actually, like, this is where Dave Portnoy comes in, because maybe I'm a little biased and he's a little biased with the Red Sox. Horrible take from him. Just really, really bad. But Barstool, very clickbait-ish. And he got a lot of views and it stirred a lot of drama. If he actually swung the three bats I just mentioned, they were all different feels. This bat falls right into that category. It's going to be a different feel. And it's not like the Yankees are the only team that are doing this, too. So I don't know.
What actually did Dave Portnoy? I didn't see the post or the tweet or whatever.
I have to look back at it. It was a few days ago now, but he was just saying kind of what Trevor McGill was saying, how it's classic Yankees.
Oh, okay.
They're only doing this because Anthony Volpe sucks. And that was like the main point of the tweet, which was really – that was pretty funny. But in all seriousness, no, he doesn't suck. This actually is helping him, and it's within the rules. As you were saying, Tucker, it goes along with his bat path. That is how he makes contact with the ball. And to just, you know, hammer home this point, it is completely legal. So, yeah, Anthony Volpe may see a little bit more of an uptick in his OPS, which they need him to have. He's already got 3 home runs, and he gets jammed a lot. That first home run he hit, Dave Sims on the call thought it was going to be a pop-up. Maybe there was some wind, and it snuck out. So he caught the barrel of his bat. That was definitely something to stir some drama. Very Barstool-esque, very Dave Portnoy-esque. And maybe a little bit of a bitterness, too, because the Red Sox got pounded by the Rangers in that first series. So shout out you, Brendan.
Yeah, shout out, Brendan.
Big old helping of copium for Dave Portnoy.
Well, I had me one of those AP5s. It was absolutely a game changer. Great used it for like 7 years. Way past
wouldn't
its
break,
prime.
Dude.
No.
Just break. No.
Hit everything.
Do you use it after the rule change?
I think I did use it after
You're grandfathered
change.
As well.
That
fine.
Was grandfathered in along with Albert Pujols on that one. But someone else that's been using the bat. But I do agree with your point, Will, that bats have been changing so much and that people, fans are kind of sneaking onto this one maybe because it was the Yankees. I think it started out with look at these Yankees, different bats. And then in game 2, they then set an MLB record or tied an MLB record. So then it was like, oh, now they're cheating. And then it was like, oh, the name Torpedoes is a cool name. So that's easy to throw around too. So it brings about all that commotion. Someone else using a torpedo bat across the way over at Citi Field is Francisco Lindor. He hasn't found his way using it yet, batting .067 right now. But it's early in the season. The Mets right now. 2-3 after a loss series to the Astros, 1-1 right now in the Miami series. They lost last night 4-2 against Sandy Alcantara. They stay losing to Sandy. Pitching has been elite for the Mets. They haven't allowed more than 4 runs in a game yet. They've allowed 3, 1, 2, 4, and 4 runs. And I don't think what we've expected from this Mets lineup is that their offense has been pretty bad, considering they haven't won most of their games with their pitching playing that well. The elite lineup that the Mets have built, adding Juan Soto, one of the best hitters in baseball history already at his young age. The offense off to a slow start, 1 run scored in 2 different games, 2 runs scored last night, 3 in another game, and then they broke out and scored 10 in one game. I believe Pete Alonso hit his grand slam in that one. And you guys were kind of talking about it before when we were talking about this off-air. The Mets, like you said, Tucker, can kind of rely on a little bit of thump, but they're still looking for that consistency throughout their lineup.
Yeah, they need to figure out how to manufacture more runs. It's something that I was worried about when the Yankees hit 9 home runs, but then like throughout that Brewer series, they started You know, putting a couple guys on base, you know, little singles here and there, a couple of doubles mixed in, you know, knocking in runs, not with the long ball. That's just what the Mets need to infuse their offense a little bit. You can't rely solely on the home run ball unless you're maybe, I don't know, the Twins from like 4 years ago. But yeah, this Mets team just needs to kind of figure it out offensively. Obviously, it's going to be huge if Francisco Lindor, once he clicks and starts to turn it around. He had a slow start last year as well, and by the end of the season, he was in NL MVP talks. So probably just a wait on it for Francisco Lindor. Definitely want to get this last win, want to win the series against the Marlins, because that's in division, of course.
And
so,
it's the Marlins.
Yeah, and it's the Marlins, although they're like they should get better going forward. They're not in like rebuild mode. They're like sort of moving moving away from total rebuild. But still, the Mets are in a win now mode, so they should absolutely be winning that game. They've got the Marlins again next week at home at Citi Field. They also have to play the Blue Jays. It's their home opener this weekend.
I'll be there.
I was going to say, and Brendan will be there in attendance, Mets beat reporter. What have you seen from the Mets so far? Have you? Have they played? They haven't played at home yet, right?
No,
home opener this weekend.
Astros.
But, a lot of the same. I mean, you mentioned it. You can't win when your team, your offense is so one-dimensional right now. And you need to have that consistency in offense. You need those guys like Vientos, like Lindor, to come in and continue where they were last year. I mean, they were fantastic last year, and they're both off to slow starts. But once you start getting guys like that going, you're able to manufacture those runs. You're able to string a couple hits together. And this offense, really, I am not worried about. I think they will find it within the next couple of weeks. The pitching was what I mentioned when I did the season preview podcast with Grace McCarron and Joe Henry, the other two Mets beat reporters this year. What we all kind of noted was that this pitching staff was kind of going to be the X factor, was whether they can come in and be effective, whether they can come in and stay healthy. And to this point, 3 runs, 1 run, 2 run, 4 runs, 4 runs allowed in every single game. This pitching staff has been phenomenal, both starting and the bullpen. So when you look at how they've done this season compared with what this offense could be, the Mets have a very high ceiling right now. They just need to get more consistent.
Yeah, I agree. I think as a Mets, not as a Mets fan, but if you were a Mets fan, this is the problem you would want to see. If you are a Mets fan, this is the problem you would want to see.
Disgusted after he said that.
Caught myself real quick. But because the Mets, like you said, Brendan, I think they expect their offense to even out. You look at the names. They're getting Francisco Alvarez back eventually. He broke his hand in March. Right now, expected to return in April the earliest. May is more probable. But they were so much better on offense and defense with Alvarez in the lineup. He's just a power bat. He walks a lot. He looks at good pitches, has great at-bats. And then on the other side, their ERA went from like a 4 to a 2.5 when Francisco Alvarez was catching. So clearly just really good at calling games. Also good on the base paths, throwing runners out. So getting him back will be big. And then Vientos, like you mentioned, I think that's huge. Last year, Vientos was so good. His WAR from last season is very high, and especially considering he was playing poorly at the start of the season. The big change when the Mets hit that turnaround in the season was when they let go of Brett Beatty, sent him back down, bought Vientos back up. Vientos started going off, and eventually Alvarez got healthy, and those two were really what changed the lineup. Their win percentage was completely different when Alvarez and Vientos were in. So Vientos 2-for-15 right now. I believe this was before the Marlins game, so 2-for-15 before that game, only a 133. So they really got to get him and Alvarez going, I think. But I think the pitching is, this is what you wanted to see if you were the Mets. You wanted to see that the pitching can be okay, because you expect the lineup to be fine. So if that lineup turns out and evens out like we expected to, I think the pitching can carry them to higher ceilings than maybe they even thought. But first, they got to get going for sure.
Yeah, David Peterson, the stat on David Peterson before that last start, they won 10-4 that opening game of the Marlins series here. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 17 out of his last 21 or 20 starts, he has only given up 2 earned runs or fewer. And then in that last start he just had, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He really was. Only 2 earned runs again in 6 innings, 5 hits, 9 Ks. Their pitching is not the issue right now. I think it could be an issue because they don't have a lot of their big guns at the top of that rotation. But hey, you get some solid starts out of Tyler McGill and David Peterson down the stretch here while Montas and Manaea are still on the shelf, that's a big positive. I think the real issue with the Mets, especially to start, obviously you want that top of the lineup to get going.
Yeah.
Lindor usually always starts off a little slow. And then, as you were saying, Tucker, he was second MVP last year.
Yeah.
So really not too concerned at all with Lindor. He will figure things out and get it going. He's the heart of that lineup, really. I know Soto's there, but it starts with Lindor. And bringing back Pete Alonso, too. We were talking about it on the Nosebleeds last week, how interesting the career path of Juan Soto's been. He had Trey Turner and Anthony Rendon to start. Then he goes to the Padres, and he had Machado and Tatis. Goes to the Yankees, and he has Judge's protection. Now he's got a legit leadoff guy in front of him in Francisco Lindor. That's no discredit to Trey Turner. I would have to go back and look at what the lineup was. Juan Soto was also, he was only 19 years old, and the numbers he's putting up now are, they're just blowing past the numbers he had with the Nationals, and those were really good. But this is one of the more different lineup constructions I think Juan Soto's been placed into, and the Mets are still getting that feel for it because 1-4 right now is pretty solid. And then you get to 5-6 round there. They're still figuring out. 7-9 is a massive question mark for the Mets right now. I think Tyrone Taylor is an excellent complementary outfielder and can start ball games for you. Is he going to consistently be in the 7-9? I don't know. What are you going to get out of Luis Angel Acuna? I don't know as well. Brett Beatty's looked pretty solid to start, but this is my point. There's so many question marks. Jose Siri's another question mark. He's a big swing and miss guy, but he can also hit 20 home runs for you, whatever the case may be. So there's a lot of things that need to be ironed out in the bottom half of that lineup for the Mets that they haven't quite gotten there yet, and they weren't there at all during the offseason, and they didn't really do anything to address it. They brought back Jesse Winker, but they didn't add they lost JD Martinez.
Yeah.
He would have been a solid option to have in that lineup, and he's still a free agent right now. That would be interesting if he gets picked up. But for me, the biggest question is the productivity in that bottom half of the lineup for the Mets. What is their answer to that? Because that will allow them to unleash the top of the lineup. If you can get something going 7-9, there you are right again with Lindor and Soto and Alonso getting more ABs. So they got to figure out 7-9.
And I love your point that these are kind of problems nobody was anticipating. I feel like most of the MLB and Mets fans especially thought that the lineup was all set. You know, there was no problems. They just slot Soto into a lineup that was dominating at the end of the season last year, and we're all good. But like you said, now to start the season out, we're seeing those problems that maybe could have been addressed earlier on if they were seen. Sean Manaea, you mentioned, his rehab got pushed back 2 weeks recently. He's now expected to be out until around May. They're hoping to get him back. It was one of the reasons they were able to make that turnaround last year for sure. A couple of shutouts and a lot of gems from Manaea, so we're hoping he gets back. Staying with the National League, though, there is two undefeated teams still in baseball after the Yankees' L last night. They're both in the NL. They're both on the West Coast. It's the Dodgers at 6-0 and the Padres at 5-0. I'm not going to ask who you guys think is the better team because it's obviously the Dodgers, I feel like. But who do you guys think stays undefeated the longest and why? Or what have you seen from these Dodgers, from these Padres that have simply been destroying their opponents?
I kind of deferred this one to the Dodgers. I can't lie. I just feel like the Dodgers are the less likely team to pick up an L in like the next week or so. The Padres have a series with the Cubs coming up after they finish up the series that they are currently playing in, and that's in Chicago. The Cubs have been, well, we'll get to our underrated teams later, but this is like a little preview for me. They're my underrated team, so I think the Cubs could give them some problems.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the Padres playing right now?
Padres play the Guardians again.
Guardians today. Okay, so honestly, the Guardians also have looked pretty solid to start the year.
Yeah.
They had a really tough series against the Royals, who are also going to be making a run at the AL Central this year. That'll be a good fight all year between the Guards and the Royals. But yeah, the Guardians have a decent shot to beat the Padres tonight. And for the Dodgers, who do they have?
Braves.
Braves, easy money. It'll probably happen tonight, where the Padres will lose their first game and the Dodgers will continue to win.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree.
Ooh.
I think the Braves are not an 0-6 team.
I also agree with that, but I just don't think they can get by the Dodgers.
I think they finally get one. I think they finally get their first win. This Dodgers team has done what everyone expected them to do. To this point in the season, they've come out, they've raked, they've pitched. They can do it all, but I think tonight is the night it happens. They take their first loss of the season. Braves get their first win of the season. It's kind of storybook.
Okay.
It is. I think I'm going to stick with that, too, because looking at the matchups tonight, you got Dylan Cease on the mound for the Pods. A bad first start. He's not Blake Snell. Blake Snell's on the mound for the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers win this game again with Blake Snell. I thought if the Braves were going to take a game in this series, it was going to be Sale against May, which was last night. Now you have Blake Snell tonight going against Bryce Elder. So although these two teams, it's obviously very close, I think there's a better shot that the Padres lose tonight. And as we know in baseball, you know, teams aren't going to go 15-0, 20-0. So it's going to happen soon that one of these teams are going to lose.
What about the Rays a couple years ago?
Yeah, except for the Rays a couple years ago. Look at the Rays now. Actually, the Rays are 4-1 right now. So they're
First in the AL East.
Are they in first right now?
Yeah, the Yankees are a half game back of the Rays right now.
Unbelievable. Would you look at
because that? Probably because of run differential or something. I don't know. But that makes no sense because the Yankees run differentials through the roof.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be.
The Brewers.
Or no, it's because the Rays have 4 wins. The Yankees have 3.
So the
played
Rays.
Oh,
yeah, they played on Monday.
Yeah. So
Yankees got that day off.
And Tucker, you mentioned we were going to touch on teams we thought were underrated. For me, I'm going with Brendan's team right here. I'm going with the Rangers. I feel like there wasn't enough noise preseason. Maybe they're not, you know, a team that's supposed to be mid, but I think they will be better than most people think they are. I think they'll be elite, not just good this season. I mean, you mentioned it before. That lineup has a bunch of great players that maybe had a bit of a down year last year as opposed to the season before where they were all great, but it wasn't even really that much of a down year. I mean, they just had, I guess it was a down year. I'll say they just had a down year. This is still a great team that's won a World Series recently. I think Eovaldi and DeGrom shoving early can show you what this team can be like when they have two guys that can be aces, that can shut down an opponent, what that can do later on in the season. You mentioned the lineup, Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, Jock Peterson. They have savvy vets that can get runs in. I think it's just going to be putting runners on the base for those bets that'll be for the Rangers. And like you mentioned, the bullpen. But as we know, around the deadline, when teams are in position to go fire away, they can go get relievers easily. I'm going with the Rangers for my team. Who are you seeing as a underrated team right now?
I'm gonna go the same team.
Yeah.
And
surprise,
surprise. it's my team. But you look at, I already mentioned it once, but the top four in the rotation came out and all had very solid games against a good Red Sox team, a good Red Sox offense. The pitching staff has been great. And you look at, we'll take a look at Bochy. He never goes back to the playoffs after winning a World Series. So we win the World Series 2 years ago. Last year's not a playoff year. This year is. Marcus Semien, in odd years, is much better than in even years. Statistically.
Is that true?
Wow. Yes. Average, home runs, RBIs, all of his stats, elevated in odd years, down in even years. So this is one of those odd years for him. But you look at this lineup, and it's got the star power. It's got the bats. It improved a lot over the offseason, and there's so much depth in this lineup. You look at the outfield, bringing Kevin Pillar out of retirement, who's hitting well already this season. Leody Taveras, who's hitting well, those are two guys who you don't really expect to come in and be big bats for you. Langford and left, probably our best player hitting-wise to this point in the season. Adolis and right, he's basically competing with Langford for who's that better hitter right now. And then this infield has been proven. We know what they can do. But then you got guys like Kyle Higashioka, Josh Smith, Ezekiel Duran. Like, these are guys who have had good seasons, who are going to be able to come in, step in, fill that role perfectly, and hit consistently. So I think this team is just so deep and so loaded, and they're not getting the recognition they deserve.
I will say, for an underrated squad, I think that's a fair take, Brendan. I think the Rangers, I thought they were going to win the division from day one.
A lot of people didn't.
Really?
I saw a lot of people think the Astros were still going to take it.
Yeah, I think people.
I think that's also fair, too. It's going to be one of them, And I think the next team, whoever comes in second, will be a wild card team. But I do think going into the season that the Rangers did have it. As long as everyone stays healthy as well, because that was definitely part of the issue last year. DeGrom has looked pretty solid coming back as well. You cross fingers, hope he stays healthy as well. My underrated team, and I'm going to stick with this as long as I can, is Tampa. I know they've played the Rockies and the Pirates. They're 4-1. Their pitching staff has looked really good with a bunch of names I really haven't heard of other than maybe four. And their lineup, same deal. There's probably five guys in there that I've seen consistently over the last few years. The other guys, I couldn't really tell you too much about them.
How do the Rays keep getting away with this?
They always – and you know what, Tucker? They've done it our entire lives.
It's ridiculous. Every single year. Their lineup is like their 40-man is – 20 of them, I have literally never seen their name before in my life.
Exactly.
It makes no sense. But they're all, like, really solid, though. Yeah. It's really ridiculous.
It's crazy, too. Well, I guess it's not crazy because the fan base does want better, and especially with their owner pulling out of that stadium agreement, that's not a good look. But they still find ways to get the job done. And at any given year, last year they were not that great, right? But any given year with any given roster, the Tampa Bay Rays could be good or they could be very mid. So we'll see. They're off to a hot start, and everyone seems to be clicking. That's what the Rays do best, that they find guys that will give you a good year when you need it. And then they'll offload them and get guys that will be good in the next 3-4 years, whatever the case may be. So right now, I'm going to stick with it, and I'm going to stick with it the whole season, but I think the Tampa Bay Rays are going to be the most underrated team in baseball, probably the most overlooked, and they could potentially shake up the American League East and make it an even tougher division than it already is.
They've been hitting clips in George M. Steinbrenner Field down in Tampa. It's pretty funny. They shoot off fireworks mid-game after home runs. It's really sick. But for me, I already mentioned it. My underrated team is going to be the Chicago Cubs coming out to start. I think they got a bad draw with having to play the Dodgers in Tokyo with Shohei Madness and everything that was literally just stacked against them. And they have a really, really solid depth chart. Like, when you really take a look at it, Carson Kelly just hit for the cycle at catcher the other night. You got Nico Horner at second base. That is not a bad guy to have over there. Matt Shaw with Justin Turner playing behind him at third base. Dansby Swanson, of course, at shortstop. PCA, P. Crow Armstrong, is still getting better. Ian Happ is a veteran presence in the outfield. Kyle Tucker is excellent. And Seiya Suzuki is also a really, really good hitter. He's been doing the DHing for them. And you look at their starting rotation too. Shota Imanaga is a great ace to have on your staff. Justin Steele, very solid, and Jameson Taillon bringing it up in the third hole. This is a really, really solid roster. The only thing I'm worried about is their schedule going forward, because it is not going to get easy anytime soon. They're playing the A's right now. They obviously played the Dodgers. They played a 4-game set with the Diamondbacks, which they split after the Tokyo series. But then they have the Padres at home, the Rangers at home, the Dodgers on the road, the Padres on the road, the Diamondbacks at home, and then two more with the Dodgers.
Jeez.
Then they play the Phillies, which they're also one of my teams on the back burner. But in the interest of time, give me the Cubs. I think this stretch in the first half of April is going to be so telling, and I think they're going to impress a lot of people. They're not going to go down without a fight in these next few series. They're going to be really, really tough, but I'm expecting a lot of fight and a handful of, they have a flag, like the white flag with the blue W. Fly the blue W. The Chicago Cubs are back.
We'll fly it around. I've heard a lot of good Cubs talk, too, but I didn't hear it before the season. You know, these first couple of games, after seeing them, you know, they play the Dodgers in Japan. Obviously, they're going to lose that, but hearing a lot of good buzz about the Cubs, and you've got me sold, too. I think the Cubs are going to be great this season. And we love to chat baseball all day long here, but that's going to do it from us here in the Bronx. If you're a Yankee fan like some of us, be happy. Your team's good. If you're a Mets fan like the rest of New York, be happy. Team's good. If you're a Texas Ranger fan like Brendan, team's also good, so be happy. I'm alongside Tucker Austin, Brendan Shorey, with Will Talent behind the glass. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast. Our sports director is Bobby Giaffardini, and I've been Evan Harkin saying so long from WFUV Sports.